sometimes many years or many weeks, days, they themselves refer and surrender to the police and to the court and want to be punished. Because of what? Because of this nafs al-lawwama, or consciousness that we have in our own mind, which is called wijdan. So that's why even this zalim, though he has an opportunity to oppress others for a short time or long time, but within this zalim, based on this anthropological kind of understanding of the nature of man, he has this wijdan, this kind of judge inside him, yes, or herself. That's why finally, at the end of the day, what he receives is a kind of punishment. Even he himself punishes himself. Because of what? Because this nafs, this soul is always there, always with him, always reminding him of all those wrong things that he did. That is why if you look at the history, you will not find any, let's say, oppressor who be happy in the whole life, particularly at the end of their lives.
Okay.
This, if you go to the dictators, to the oppressor, for example, kings, let's say leaders in the history, if you go and study about them, you see that all of them either been punished by their opponents, mm-hmm, or even if they were not punished, the end of their life were the most bad and evil life. And it is the thing that we see in the life of all the oppressors. For example, in our time, we saw Saddam Hussein.
Yes.
Saddam Hussein oppressed.
Yes.
Brutally, mercilessly, let's say horribly, we can say, the poor people of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw what happened to this dictator at the end of his life, you know?
Okay.
Or Gaddafi, or many other, let's say, oppressors here and there, we've seen. Or the King Reza Khan, for example, in Iran, we can say. Look what happened to them. It tells us this fact that being oppressor, performing oppression on the innocent people, on the poor people, will not have a good result.
Yes.
For the oppressor. This is what we see.
And so many other examples. For example, in the Arab Spring, we could see in so many of the Arab countries and Muslim countries.
Yes.
For example, yes. Gaddafi was the other one, for example. And so many other dictators as the cruel
Pinochet,
ones.
Pinochet, for example.
Yeah.
And we see,
yes,
all of them in our time. If you go back to the previous
history
centuries,
Islam,
there are lots of examples. Yes.
And before that, in the previous generations, you know, we could see the stories of pharaohs and the kings,
exactly,
you know, of all the times, whether Greek, Roman, Persian, or, for example, that's right, Egyptian ones, you know, all of them somehow were, that's right, they answered for all their oppressions that they did during their own time. Adolf Hitler, for example,
exactly,
of the contemporary time.
That's only in this life.
Yes.
And they should wait the real punishment in the hereafter life, which is everlasting kind of punishment.
Mm-hmm. That's all right. Okay.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Praises to Allah, all glories to Allah, we worship Allah and no one but Allah.
But since they are powerful and they have power, the people might have a superficial look at their lifestyle, isn't it? Because, for example, they could amass wealth or they could become rich. And usually the young generation, you know, are easily deceived by such a superficial look at their lives, Shaykh.
You know, apparently it seems that they have very superficial life with lots of, for example, facilities, in
yes,
their life, luxury
yes,
life. They are enjoying a lot. Let me tell you this story, which is really beautiful, about Alexander the Great.
Mm-hmm.
It is said that Alexander the Great once was victorious. He conquered lots of new, let's say, lands, areas, countries. And he was coming back to Greece from these lots of conquerors and victories that he had. And he was very much happy. Then he reached a place where a Hakim and a wise man was living by the name Diogenes or Diogen.
Okay. Yes.
And then when he approached the cave in which the Diogen or Diogenes was living, he told all the army members, commanders, let's say, the officials, that today I want to gift this Diogenes whatever he wants from me. Because today I want to do a very great kind of job in the history to be recorded that Alexander the Great did such a thing with this Hakim. That's why he approached the cave and asked Hakim that, okay, Diogenes, today I'm very much happy, I'm very much proud of myself because I have lots of victories and I have lots of golds, lots of servants, lots of new lands, areas. I'm really happy and I want to today to do a favor for you. Please ask me whatever you ask me today, I will provide you with that.
Okay.
For example, if you want to rule over new, let's say, countries, nations, I will appoint you as a king of those areas. If you want, for example, gold, silvers, money,
yes.
If you need, for example, beautiful girls, servants, whatever, I'm ready to provide you with whatever you ask me.
Okay.
Then it is said it's very nice. Then the Diogenes came out of from his cave. No, Diogenes was sitting before this cave, in front of the cave. And then Diogenes raised his hand and looked at Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great was on his horse. He was riding a horse.
Okay.
He looked at him and said, really, if I ask whatever you will be provided me with, he said, yes, of course, I promise. I told all my members, my soldiers, my army, my commanders that I will do that. I will do that, absolutely. The only thing that this Diogenes asked from Alexander the Great was this, that please move a little because I am taking the bath with the sun's rays. And please just move a little
sunshine,
away.
Huh?
Yeah, move a little away. Let the sun shine. Then Alexander the Great was shocked. Said that this is the only thing that you really want from me.
Okay.
Diogenes said, yes, this is the only thing that I want from you. Then the interpreters of this event interpreted this very beautifully. It says that Diogenes wanted to tell Alexander the Great that you are like obstacle between the man, between the servants of God and God.
Okay.
You are not the one that
you are a barrier.
You are a barrier, exactly.
That's right. Okay.
You should not be proud of yourself. You know, you should let the people to live freely. You have not the right to, for example, conquer their lands and usurp all their properties and then donate it to me. It is the wrong thing that you're doing. Then it is said about Alexander the Great that he was really shocked and a kind of revolution started in his own mind.
That's right.
That look, this man is living such a happy, prosperous, and calm life, but I am always worried, concerned about all the wrong things that I'm doing on the people, on the, let's say, the poor people. To say that after that, Alexander the Great was always trying to achieve that comfortability, that peace, that Diogenes, the Hakim, the wise man, was enjoying. He was always telling that this kind of lifestyle in which there is kind of peace, kind of comfortability, prosperity, tranquility. I'm always seeking this thing, but I cannot find. You know, so a zalim, an oppressor or oppressive person will never enjoy a real happy life, a real, let's say, prosperous life.
Yes.
He will never achieve any kind of true tranquility or comfortability in his life.
That's right.
Yeah, apparently it seems that their life was, let's say, beautiful life, enjoyable life, luxury life with lots of pleasures. But in reality, if you go deep within that life, you find no room for any kind of pleasure or happiness in their lives.
That's all right. And for sure, as we said, these dictators might have a good life for the people, superficially speaking, but inside, they might experience so many traumas, you know, in their life. That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. It was very kind of you.
You're welcome.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min labani Ali wa Husayn wa Hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Just one day after France's foreign minister earned praise for saying that sanctions on Israel could be coming over their refusal to allow humanitarian aid to Gaza, he quickly backtracked in a session before Parliament. Many are saying the episode revealed the uniquely powerful sway Zionism has in France.
France, although it has the biggest Jewish community, in Europe, has also the most extreme right-wing anti-Palestinian Jewish community in Europe. And this community, this Jewish community in France, has a lot of saying and a lot of control over the media, over the political class. So you have very few people within this community who are protesting what's going on in the Middle East, not like the United States and Great Britain.
The majority of France's Jews fled from former French colonies in Africa once those countries gained independence in the 1950s and 1960s, and they reportedly brought with them stringent anti-Arab and pro-imperialist views. In 2019, French Parliament controversially and incorrectly equated anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, and they are currently reviewing a proposal to fully criminalize anti-Zionism.
They're saying straight, anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Therefore, any criticism of Zionism, any criticism of Israel, means you are a criminal because you're an anti-Semite. And so it's killing all debate. Now, all throughout the collective West, but especially in France, the number one threat to freedom of speech is the Zionist movement and the pro-Israeli movement. And I weigh my words because it's very, very dangerous to say something like that in France because you'll find yourself in court.
Since October 7th, support for Hamas and even support for Palestine is often being prosecuted as so-called apology for terrorism. Pro-Palestinian demonstrations were banned nationwide for weeks, leading to thousands of fines on protesters, with protesters arrested and prosecuted for apology for terrorism for as little as carrying a Palestinian flag. Without the ability to openly criticize the policies of Israel, many believe it's difficult to imagine that Paris will reduce its unconditional support for Tel Aviv, no matter how many atrocities and war crimes they commit against Palestinians. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
South Korea's progressives extended their majority in the National Assembly in an election largely seen as a repudiation of conservative President Yoon Suk-yeol and his People Power Party. Democratic Party leader Lee Jae-myung promised to work for the greater good.
The ruling and opposition parties must work together to solve livelihood problems. We will spearhead the efforts to overcome the livelihood crisis. I once again express deep gratitude to the South Korean people.
Many South Koreans feel President Yoon has been overstepping his powers with a series of missteps and controversial measures, including the failure to resolve an ongoing doctor's strike.
There were too many cases where this government pushed through policies that made no sense, as if it were a dictatorship.
While the vote revolved around Yoon and the economy, with problems such as a lack of affordable housing and increasing polarization, Yoon's foreign policy latitude will also be curtailed.
This is really bad news for President Yoon. He's going to have an extremely hard time getting anything through the National Assembly. And what's more, it may jeopardize some of his great relations that he's formed with the U.S. and Japan during his presidency.
A new progressive party launched by Cho Guk, a former justice minister, won 12 seats in the assembly, further tipping the scales against President Yoon and his People Power Party.
The two-thirds majority enjoyed by progressives in the assembly will enable them to fast-track legislation and push their liberal agenda. Meanwhile, President Yoon's pro-business reforms stand little chance of becoming law, with Yoon something of a lame duck for the final 3 years of his five-year term. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Italy's Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani has released a new statement following Sunday's drone attack on Russian-held Zaporizhzhia power plant in eastern Ukraine. Tajani said the risk of creating a new Chernobyl must be averted and that a free zone around the nuclear plant must be immediately declared. He also advised against fighting in the vicinity of the nuclear plant. A few days ago, during a celebration for the 75th NATO anniversary, Tajani hinted at the possibility of resuming ties with Russia in the future.
We are not at war with Russia. We criticize Moscow's policies, but we are not at war with the Russian people, and we definitely intend to resume relations with the Russian people.
It is the first time Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, the largest in Europe, has been targeted in military action since November 2022. On Tuesday, Russia blamed Ukraine for launching drone attacks on the plant for a third day, but Ukraine denied an involvement.
The Italian Foreign Ministry's position on the nuclear plant attack is very interesting. Rome, for the first time since the start of the conflict in Ukraine, is not just taking the side of Kiev, but it is pragmatically looking at the interests of the whole of Europe, without focusing on who is to blame for the attack.
Also on Tuesday, the European Union Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell reiterated a warning that the UN's atomic watchdog IAEA issued earlier this week. Borrell said the reckless drone attack in Zaporizhzhia increases the risk of a dangerous nuclear accident.
Italy has often reaffirmed its unwavering support for Ukraine, despite Russia's warning against such moves. The Italian government has so far approved 6 military support packages to Kyiv, inclusive of both lethal and non-lethal equipment and specialized military training activities. Max Civili, Rome.
As India prepares to hold the world's largest electoral exercise from April 19, the main opposition National Congress Party has said the country will lose its secular democratic credentials if the ruling BJP attains power another term, accusing Prime Minister Modi's party of dictatorship. In its election manifesto, the party has promised to boost social spending, saying Modi's ruling party has favored the interests of only the rich. The opposition party promised to uplift the marginalized if it comes to power. Pre-election polls, however, predict Modi sweeping back for a third term. Election results will be declared on June 4th.
Most Indians have realized that only Congress party can do good for poor and minorities, which is what democracy means. The country is divided today due to politics of division just for votes.
India's main opposition party, which ruled the country for decades, has been struggling to compete with Modi's ruling BJP, which mainly counts on country's largest Hindu majority population for its vote share. The Congress party, while releasing its election manifesto, has promised more help for the marginalized, including assured jobs for young, improving farmers' income, and better health insurance payouts. The Congress party accused Modi's BJP of threatening the constitution.
Our party has been crippled using tax agencies. Is it level playing ground? This is not only Congress party. They will also do same with media houses. So we need to save democracy and constitution. We have to unite against autocratic policies of the BJP government.
Accusing Modi's BJP of crippling his party by freezing its bank account in tax dispute, the opposition party manifesto has vowed to undo BJP policies if the party comes to power, promising that all anti-people laws passed by the ruling BJP without proper democratic process will thoroughly be reviewed and changed, including a much-debated electoral bond controversy. The party is sure to address issues related to minorities, communal conflicts, mob lynching and cattle killings, bulldozer politics and suppression of human rights and shrinking dissent. The Congress party, the main challenger to the BJP, hopes to mount a challenge to Modi's BJP by joining hands with regional parties. The ruling party has, however, downplayed Congress party's manifesto as a bundle of lies, saying they ruled for 50 years, which is now a divided house of leaders working for personal interests.
In 2014, Modi's ruling BJP gained popularity among India's Hindu majority, promising revolutionary changes in the country, including a crackdown on corruption and economic prosperity. Critics, however, argue another term for the ruling BJP would undermine India's status as a secular democracy, as the ruling party's broader agenda is to transform India into a Hindu supremacist nation. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Highly politicized French polling agencies have rarely dared to make surveys on Palestine, but after 6 months of attempted genocide, a new poll shows public opinion dramatically shifting against Israel. Since October, support for Israel's plan to eliminate Hamas has dropped from 65 to 56%, while condemnation for Israel's war aim has jumped from 35 to 44%. Following the mainstreaming of Islamophobia, France had become an ardently pro-Zionist country. But the polls show that a nation evenly split on support for Palestine isn't far away.
Here in France, we have many stars and actors who are Arabs and Muslims, but who don't say a word about Palestine and who don't support the Palestinian cause openly. It's a shame because they could have a big impact on the French public. Instead, they shut themselves up.
Israel est illégitime.
Israel is illegitimate and has no right to exist. Palestine is unjustly occupied, and I don't see how anyone can fail to see that. I'm waiting for Iran and Hezbollah to do their work and for Israel to get out.
As Palestinians return to the city of Khan Yunis, Gaza's second largest city, the results of 6 months of war are catastrophic. Israel has killed over 33,000 people and wounded 80,000 others in Gaza, the West Bank, and Lebanon. Famine is affecting half of Gaza's 2.2 million people, while some two-thirds of the nation's buildings have been reduced to rubble.
This war really has to stop. People are forgetting that the Palestinians are humans, just like everyone else. There are just horrible things going on for women and children. and there has to be peace immediately.
After 6 months, the United Nations Human Rights Council finally took a position on the horrific invasion. They called for a halt in all arms sales to Israel and for Israel to be held accountable for possible war crimes and crimes against humanity. Many attribute the Western public's shift against Israel not to the mainstream media or brave politicians, but to the gruesome and heartbreaking images being relayed on social and alternative media. Images of the human costs of the West's support for Tel Aviv have long been censored. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Afghanistan is now battling an invisible foe that threatens its future generations. The World Food Program has sounded the alarm on the rising tide of malnutrition cases, a crisis worsened by the country's ongoing economic challenges and reduced international aid. Marking the World Health Day, the Taliban's Minister of Public Health expresses concern over the malnutrition crisis, calling for international support.
It is clear that Afghanistan is one of the poor countries in the world. There is no doubt that children and mothers are grappling with malnutrition. We need the support of the world in combating the disaster. I call on the UNICEF, WHO and WFP to continue their assistance to our people with poor health conditions, especially those suffering from malnutrition.
The impact of international sanctions and the U.S. policies cannot be overlooked in understanding the gravity of the situation. That is a warning by pediatricians here in Afghanistan. Years of conflict have severely damaged the country's infrastructure, making it a challenge to provide adequate healthcare and nutrition to vulnerable groups. Moreover, recent cuts in international assistance as well as the Western-led sanctions are worsening things.
There are also some foreign factors exacerbating the malnutrition crisis in Afghanistan. Afghan assets that belong to Afghans and are meant to support our economy are frozen. We are witnessing a decline in international health assistance, especially to our children. Some international bodies continue to collaborate, but these are not sufficient. Some organizations that used to support families have ended their missions in Afghanistan.
A lot of people like me are coming to this hospital because their children are malnourished. I think everything boils down to a single problem, economic shortcoming. If our family had enough to eat, our children wouldn't become undernourished. People don't have money and they're not receiving aid anymore.
Experts emphasize that the need for immediate aid cannot be overstated. Afghan families are in desperate need of assistance to combat this malnutrition crisis. The international community must come together to provide the necessary resources and support to save lives and alleviate the suffering of the Afghan people. The economic crisis in Afghanistan is taking a toll on the health and well-being of the war-ravaged nation. Advocates warn that without a significant increase in support, the crisis will further deepen. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Thousands of Austrians marched under the slogan "Stop the genocide, stop the occupation" in the capital Vienna. The Palestine Committee and Palestine Solidarity Austria organized the demonstration. The march was held on Saturday, a week after house raids of Palestinian activists in the city of Linz. Police recently also interrogated protesters in other cities. International Quds Day was an aspiration for the organizers of Saturday's protest.
And all these commemoration days is to really say, wake up, we are really in the situation where people are getting killed every day and we have to stop it as soon as possible.
Organizers also criticized a four-day visit of the President of the Austrian Parliament, Wolfgang Sobotka, to Israel this week.
Well, obviously, when looking at the last 6 months, there's been some unconditional support for Israel, obviously, and their action in the Gaza Strip, which is absolutely unacceptable.
Several speakers stressed Austrian solidarity with Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war continues unabated. They said the Austrian government does not speak for them.
It's the most obvious wrongdoing that I've ever seen in my life.
The protest has called for support for Lebanon and Yemen against US imperialist aggression. People from around the world joined the Vienna March.
I was born in Chile under a dictatorship and I have a lot of Palestinian friends. I am even wearing a t-shirt from a team called Palestina, who was founded by Palestinian migrants several years ago. I couldn't be in peace with myself if I wasn't here demonstrating and saying and raising my voice, at least.
Representatives of Jewish organizations such as Not In Our Name stressed their continued solidarity with the Palestinian struggles. Organizers said all Austrians must continue to protest against the US-Israeli genocide and their government support for it, despite the repression.
We cannot call ourselves humans, regardless of our nationalities or political views or religions, and be indifferent about what's going on nowadays in Gaza.
Thousands marched in the Austrian capital Vienna in support of the people and the resistance in Gaza as the Israeli genocide war claims more civilian lives. Despite Austria's repression, the state and the police were unable to stop the Palestine solidarity movement. Saturday's demonstration has once again shown that the support for Gaza remains strong in Austria. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
A federal judge has denied Hunter Biden's attempts to dismiss federal gun charges against him. The ruling all but ensures a trial will move forward this summer. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. A federal judge in Delaware refused on Friday, 12th of April, to throw out a federal gun case against Hunter Biden, rejecting the president's son's claim that he is being prosecuted for political purposes as well as other arguments. U.S. District Judge Mary Ellen Noreika denied defense efforts to scuttle the prosecution charging Hunter Biden with lying about his drug use in October of 2018 on a form to buy a gun that he kept for about 11 days. Hunter Biden's lawyers had argued the case was politically motivated and asserted that an immunity provision from an original plea deal that fell apart still holds. They had also challenged the appointment of special counsel David Weiss, the U.S. attorney in Delaware, to lead the prosecution. The trial is tentatively scheduled to begin in early June. Judge Mary Ellen Noreika, who was appointed to the bench by former President Donald Trump, has not yet ruled on a challenge to the constitutionality of the gun charges. Hunter Biden faces separate tax counts in Los Angeles, California, alleging he failed to pay at least $1.4 million in taxes over 3 years while living an extravagant lifestyle during his days of using drugs. The judge overseeing that case refused to dismiss the charges earlier this month. Hunter Biden has pleaded not guilty in both cases. A representative for his legal team didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. President Biden's son has acknowledged struggling with an addiction to crack and cocaine during that period in 2018, but his lawyers have said he didn't break the law and another non-violent first-time offender would not have been charged. Defense attorney Abby Lowe had argued Hunter Biden was selectively charged for improper political purposes. They argued that David Weiss buckled under political pressure to indict the president's son amid criticism of the plea deal from Donald Trump and other Republicans. Judge Noreika said in her ruling that Biden's team provided nothing concrete to support a conclusion that anyone actually influenced the special counsel's team. The pressure campaign from congressional Republicans may have occurred around the time that special counsel decided to move forward with indictments instead of pretrial diversion. But the court has been given nothing credible to suggest that the conduct of those lawmakers or anyone else had any impact on the special counsel, the judge wrote. It is all speculation. The national broadcaster ABC News has also covered the same story. A judge in Delaware has denied attempts by President Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, to dismiss three federal gun charges, all but ensuring a trial will move forward this summer. Attorneys for Hunter Biden in December filed a flurry of challenges to an indictment brought by special counsel David Weiss, challenging David Weiss's authority to file charges and claiming the indictment came as the result of a selective and vindictive prosecution. Defense attorneys also argued that an immunity provision tethered to Hunter Biden's ill-fated plea agreement remained in effect. Prosecutors say Hunter Biden lied on a federal form about his drug use when he obtained a Colt Cobra 38 SPL revolver in 2018, after he later acknowledged in his memoir, Beautiful Things, that he was addicted to drugs around that time. Hunter Biden owned the firearm for 11 days and never fired it, according to his attorneys. David Weiss's office in January pushed back on Hunter Biden's efforts to dismiss the case, calling his various arguments absurd, stunningly weak, and wholly unsupported by facts and law, and a fiction designed for a Hollywood script. On Friday, 12th of April, Judge Mary Ellen Noreika sided with prosecutors, ensuring that the case will move forward to trial, which is tentatively scheduled to begin in early June. Attorneys for Hunter Biden had rested their hopes for dismissal in large part on their claim that an immunity provision in their plea deal, which ultimately fell apart, was ratified when both parties signed it. But David Weiss's office argued that the contract required approval from a probation officer, and the probation officer never signed it. Judge Mary Ellen Noreika wrote on Friday, 12th of April, that the relevant language in the agreement unambiguously requires probation to approve the agreement. Hunter Biden had also argued that David Weiss buckled under political pressure from Republicans and former President Donald Trump, but Judge Noreika issued a stinging rebuke. At best, Hunter Biden has generically alleged that individuals from the prior administration were or are targeting him or his father, and therefore his prosecution here must be vindictive, Judge Noreika wrote. The problem with this argument is that the charging decision at issue was made during this administration by Special Counsel David Weiss, at a time when the head of the executive branch of the government prosecuting the defendant is the defendant's father. Defendant's claim is effectively that his own father targeting him for being his son, a claim that is nonsensical under the facts here, Judge Noreika wrote. The ruling marks another legal setback for Hunter Biden after a federal judge in California earlier this month blocked similar challenges to a 9-count indictment on tax charges. That case is expected to go to trial just weeks after the Delaware gun case. The website Axios has also covered the same story. A federal judge has rejected attempts to dismiss the federal gun case against Hunter Biden, according to court records. Hunter Biden was indicted last year on 3 counts relating to his alleged illegal possession of a firearm. The trial is scheduled to begin in early June. U.S. District Judge Mary Ellen Noreika, appointed by former President Donald Trump, denied the efforts on Friday, 12th of April. Judge Noreika ultimately rejected the defense's argument that the prosecution is vindictive. The indictment was brought last September by special counsel David Weiss. Hunter Biden was accused of falsifying a federal firearms form and illegal possession of a firearm whilst using a narcotic. Judge Noreika also acknowledged the defense's suggestions that the Trump administration had involvement in bringing the case against him to take aim at him or his father. The problem with this argument is that the charging decision at issue was made during this administration by Special Counsel David Weiss, at a time when the head of the executive branch of the government prosecuting the defendant is the defendant's own father, Judge Noreika wrote. Defendant's claim is effectively that his own father targeted him for being his son, a claim that is nonsensical under the facts here. Hunter Biden also faces federal tax charges in California and is due to stand trial on 20th of June.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Tour to pitch.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamidi.
Islamidi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners from all around the world. Welcome back to a new episode of
Youth Station.
I am Beta.
And this is Mustafa.
Yeah. And once again, we have the chance to be next to you, the youth generation, which I think is a pleasure to be, first of all, a candidate at this generation and then have the chance to talk to this generation.
Definitely.
And at this episode, we're going to talk about the relevance between this youth generation and their interest in religious contexts. So there should be some ways based on this fact that we're living in an era full of social medias, full of technologies, and full of actually entertainments.
Right.
So we have to use this creativity in order to make them involved with the religion. So what do you think about it?
Yeah, it's. I think it's a huge problem. I would almost describe it as a crisis among youth today. Now, if somebody wants to go and look this up, they can. There's this thing called the Four Horsemen of Atheism. Okay.
Yeah.
Have you heard of this?
Yeah, I've heard.
Right. In the West, you have like these four personalities that are known as the Four Horsemen of Atheists. They are spending so much money and so much time on promoting atheism. Like we promote Islam. These people actually go and promote, like, you know, the opposite of that.
Yeah, exactly.
And what a lot of us don't realize is that in Western media, in Western movies, TV shows, cartoons, there's like, it's entrenched in that, these type of thoughts and thinking, right? They will make fun of religion. They'll make fun of religious personalities. They'll
definitely
bring up a lot of questions,
that,
right?
Yeah.
Now, if you don't have a very solid base, you will easily fall into those traps.
I do agree with that. Because sometimes even me, that I try to go research and have my knowledge upgraded to the in this combat with the Western countries. But still, there are times that they actually fool me with these beautiful words like the freedom of speech, freedom of that. Right. And these sort of things are really beautiful, at the same time empty in this inside. And the point is, there are so many things that we have to do as the youth generation, and also as the society, in order to keep and preserve our youth generation from all these hazards and harms.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners. IRIB English Radio here. So, brother, we were talking about ways and methods that we can save our youth generation from all these potential hazards.
Right. So, have you seen the movie Inception? I think we've talked about it before on the show.
I've seen that movie.
So there's this, the idea in that movie, one of the ideas in that movie is that they go and plant ideas in people's minds, right? And one of the lines in that movie is that, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but if you plant an idea in someone's head, it's very difficult to remove it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So in the same way, it's really important for us to look at what type of things we're listening to and what type of ideas we're gaining from them, right? Sometimes.
Exactly.
And the way to tackle that, I would say, you know, I'm not saying you shouldn't go and watch like these movies or TV shows. You know, if that's something you want to do, you should. But you need to be very strong in your mind, right? You need to be very strong that you don't fall into a lot of doubts. And if you do, then go and do the research.
Yeah.
But you might ask me then, what if somebody doesn't want to do that? If somebody doesn't like to do that, right? How do you make do that? I'll let you answer for it. How do you think you could make someone more attracted towards, like, better ideas or better knowledge?
I get it. I believe the first step towards a certainty is doubt. So the seed of certainty is that, first of all, you have to answer. First of all, you have to question everything. You have to question your identity, your creation. Of course, there are things that our brain is too limited to answer, like the identity of Allah Almighty, which is something that we cannot touch because our brain is more limited than these kind of criteria. Sure. But there are things that you can ask yourselves. This is the first step in my opinion. But first of all, you have to make sure that you have the capacity and tolerance towards all these doubts. Because I have some friends that whenever they feel like they're lost, whenever they, for example, watch a philosophical movie, specifically Western ones, they feel like they're lost, they lose all their hopes, they get depressed, and all of these consequences. So first of all, you have to work on yourself in order to get resistant towards all these doubts. And you know, you have to improve and develop this will in you in order to find the answer, not get lost in the questions. And for sure, it takes time. It's a really difficult road because we're living in an era full of false information. For example, they give you a piece of right information. In the cover of that right information, there are a lot of false information. And this is the sadness of the social media era that we are living in. But still, I think we can make use of it.
Definitely. I was probably among these youth at some point, who was confused or who was sort of maybe lost because, of, you know, I grew up in an environment which is in a Western sort of environment. Inside of all of us, I think we have a desire to know the truth. Right? Yeah. Every human being has that built-in desire. We would say it's, you know, in our fitra, which would be in our
exactly.
It's in our nature, you know, that we're all searching for truth. And ultimately, what I realize is by living that sort of life, Western sort of lifestyle, it doesn't necessarily bring happiness. Right?
Yeah.
It only brings temporary joy or happiness. But, you know, in the long run, what I notice in Western societies is not only in Western society, in any society where people are like sort of away from religion, they're not very happy.
Yeah.
Right? They look happy, but then they, once you go into their lives, you realize they have a lot of problems. They have a lot of family issues, for example.
Exactly.
Or they'll have other problems. And then you sort of realize why our religion has told us to do the things the right way. You know,
yeah.
Why it's told us to avoid many things. So the way, for me, the way I would attract a youth today towards religion is definitely using logic and knowledge.
Yeah.
And using real life examples of people that have failed. Right? Learn from others.
Yeah.
Learn from others' mistakes.
I believe this is a good method because as a candidate from your generation, I love someone that would come to me and challenge me about my beliefs. And then he or she has the knowledge and reasoning to convince me about the thing. Because some people think that because we are young, we cannot think. It's not like that. We are not experienced
kind of
enough. Yeah, it's kind of opposite. We are not experienced enough, okay? But that doesn't mean that we cannot be convinced by reasoning. Yeah, that's the point I wanted to mention, because it happened to me a lot that they actually felt like, okay, you're young, you don't need even to talk about these sort of things.
See, that I think that's one of the mistakes that our elders make, is that, like I said, it's kind of the opposite. I sometimes feel that our elders have closed their thinking.
Yeah.
Like if you try to challenge them about a way, you know, their way of thinking, they're not open to that.
Exactly.
Whereas today, in today's environment, you have to be open to that, right? If you're not, you're going to suffer, right?
So, yeah, we need... So, thank you, brother, to hear we talked about this issue, which is one of the most important challenges in every society, not only Western countries, I believe, in every society that we are facing, even in Muslim countries. And so, dear listeners, let's go for a short break, then we're going to come back in a blink of an eye. Welcome back, dear listeners. So this is your station, by the way. We're talking about this issue of inviting and challenging other people, specifically use the station towards thinking more by reasoning, by use of different methods. Put the reasoning and other ways aside. How can we make use of these social medias in order to invite the youth generation into thinking?
It's a very difficult question, I think.
Yeah.
Because social media is kind of like a platform that's full of everything, right? It has good things and has bad things. And I would say there's almost like a flood of more bad things on social media versus good things.
I do agree with that.
Right? So the way you want to use social media is, again, you want to be very, very... If you're viewing social media, then you have to be very careful about what you're looking at, because it can very easily take you down like many different paths, right?
Yeah.
And the way that we try to use it is to promote our ideas and you know, our... And I wanted to come back to this, that, you know, today's youth, the questions that they have, you know, like one of the main causes why they're going away from religion is because they're confused, right? They have confused ideas. And what they don't maybe... What I didn't maybe realize is that Islam and our religion is very strong in philosophy, right? And our question philosophical, but they're not being discussed or they're not being promoted. If those people who have those questions, if they were to come and look at our philosophy, they will find the answers there many times, right? So I would say you should definitely be searching for the truth, whether it's on social media or wherever you are, and, you know, turn to those people who have the answers. Don't, like, lose hope.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. This
Don't
is the
lose
point.
Hope. Yeah, yeah.
The depression that comes after those questions is because you feel like that's the end of the world. This is the complete darkness I'm getting lost in. But it's not like that. It's always someone there that will help you in order to find your answers. Islam itself is complete enough to answer all of our questions. And I think you have to give it a try, at least.
Yeah, I would say that sometimes I haven't found answers, even I've looked for them. You know, sometimes there's questions you may not be able to find answers for, by the way. For example, you know, what is God made out of? You know, even we're talking about something like, you know, there's some things like the essence, you can't reach the essence of God, you can't understand it, right? But those things that are there, you know, we need to research. That's my point. You need to go and do your research. And to make that maybe more attractive is where social media can come in, I think.
Exactly.
You know what you asked? And, you know, people are trying to do that. There's definitely people trying to do that.
When studying medicine, they tell us only one thing. There is only one principle in being successful in medicine, which is you have to have the resistance towards not understanding. I mean, there are so many times, it happens a lot to you, that you may read something, you may find your answer, but you may not be convinced, you may not be understood. Mm. You may not lose all your hopes or all your beliefs. Exactly this is the time that you can consider it as a test for all of your beliefs and how strong they are.
The other thing I wanted to add, maybe like an advice or a tip, would be that, you know, life is short. Right? And you can't spend all your time like sort of confused or
depressed or lost.
Yeah, you're gonna die one day, right? Yeah. And it's really important how you spend your life.
Exactly.
And I would say look at the end result of those people that are not religious versus maybe that are religious, and you'll see the difference in the way they've led their lives.
Yeah.
Right. So that would be one way is to sort of maybe come closer to reality.
Yeah.
Right? Understand reality. If you don't understand reality, then that's where you're going to suffer, right? Because you're going to have like false hopes or false expectations,
exactly,
which are never going to be met.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas our religion is all entrenched in reality. It reminds you of reality, right? It reminds you of death. It reminds you of so many other things.
Yeah.
I would highly recommend people to read Nahjul Balagha, you know, the sermons of Imam Ali.
Nice suggestion.
Those are amazing sermons to, first of all, make you familiar with reality and inspire and motivate you.
Yeah.
Right?
Thank you, brother. So, to give you the gist of today's discussion, I have to tell you that sometimes this feeling of not being interested in religion is because you are so much confused and you feel hopeless of finding your answers. My brother and I actually gave you some suggestions, mostly based on our own experiences towards this path. Wish it was helpful for you. Thank you for listening to us, and it was all the time we had for today's episode. So, wassalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.